You're listening to an archived version of the PDF Network call featuring special guest Paul Young, Charity Waters Director of Digital, on the subject, Using Social Media for Nonprofit Fundraising, Charity Waters Successes. The call was recorded on March 3rd, 2011, and is presented here in its entirety. For more information on the PDF Network and upcoming calls, please visit personaldemocracy.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Micha Sifri with Personal Democracy Forum, bringing you another of our regular PDF Network conference calls with movers, shakers, thinkers, and innovators in the political and technology space. As always, we appreciate the support of our sponsor, AT&T, for making these calls possible. This week, I am really thrilled to be hosting this conversation with Paul Young, who is the Director of Digital for Charity Water. And just to say briefly why I'm so excited about this call, you know, we're going to focus on how you use social media for that age-old problem of raising money. But the reason why I'm so excited is Charity Water, as Paul will describe in his opening remarks, is really, a standout among a new generation of what we might think of as web-native nonprofits. You know, still doing the important and difficult dirty work, in this case, of raising money and to help people in the poorest countries in the world drill wells to get clean water and absolutely vital work that Charity Water does. But as an organization that was just started a few years ago with definitely a different style of doing things that I think is very much inspired by the open, accessible, interactive, networking culture of the web, we really have a lot to learn from the whole digital side of what they do. So it's really a pleasure to introduce Paul. Paul Young, Charity Water, why don't you start out and, you know, give us some of the background and how the organization got going and then maybe a little bit about how you guys think about using new media in your work.
Yeah, really happy to, Micha, and thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join in and listen to me. Apologies for the thick Australian accent. I'll do my best to talk slowly and enunciate because I know it can be difficult over the phone. So as Micha said, I'd like to give a little bit more background on Charity Water. If you happen to be in front of your laptop, you feel free to point your browser to charitywater.org as well and start checking out the site to learn a bit more about us. We're a New York City-based nonprofit devoted to bringing clean and safe drinking water to people in need in developing countries. It's an important issue. There's 1 billion people on the planet that don't have access to clean and safe drinking water. And that lack of water and basic sanitation causes 80% of all diseases, kills more people every single year than all forms of violence, including war. In particular, kids are really vulnerable to waterborne diseases, lack of sanitation. It's 4,500 kids who die every day because of this issue. So a very important issue. There's a few critically important things about our brand that are really important to understand, to really understand Charity Water and who we are and how we operate. The first is our 100% model. Every single cent of public donations that we receive, we push to water projects. We take no administration fees out of it. We're even so crazy about it that for online donations, we pay back credit card fees from our operating budget. So we have two separate budgets, operating and water. Our operations we cover from a range of large donors. But it means that on the public side, if you were to donate $20 on our website today, we'd pay back that 5% credit card fee so that every cent from your money went to water projects. The other thing that we've done since our inception 5 years ago was proving every project we build by marking it on Google Maps. So every single water project we've built in our history, we've marked on Google Maps so that you can see precisely where the dollars are making an impact. So quick background on kind of our story, because we're not like a traditional nonprofit. I think we're actually a lot more like a digital startup, and that fits my professional experience. My background, I've only been with Charity Water since May of last year, and prior to that, I was just working with a social media agency in New York, Conversion. Our organization started with a birthday party 5 years ago. Our founder, Scott Harrison, had formerly been a nightclub promoter here in New York City, throwing what I've heard were amazing parties. He had a change of heart and a change of life, spent 2 years working on Mercy ships in Liberia, taking photos of surgeons donating their time for facial surgeries and whatnot in countries like Liberia. When he came back to New York City, he knew that he wanted to start a non-profit with a different focus, with that 100% model, so that every cent went to water projects. And he knew that water was the issue that he wanted to focus on because of some of those items I talked about earlier. So 5 years ago, we started with a birthday party. We quickly built a website. The second hire in our history was a designer and developer and web designer after Scott. And then we've tried many different things to fundraise and raise awareness of the cause. Content's always been really critical to who we are. Certainly events have been a big part of it in traditional development, but more and more online's been the big focus. So when we look at our online presence, first of all, there's our site, really the face of Charity Water online, charitywater.org. If you visit the site, you'll notice that it doesn't really look like a traditional nonprofit site. Design's really important to us. The look and feel of our charity, whether it's online, offline, at events, anywhere else, is really important. So if you look at charitywater.org, you'll notice it's more like maybe an Apple website or something like that than a traditional nonprofit. Here we tell a lot of stories. We frequently use video content. You can dig in and see Scott talking about a 45-minute talk on our history as you click through. We also frequently do a number of campaign-focused sites. Every September, we do a specific campaign focused on a specific issue. We celebrate our birthday by drilling a well in the field on September 7th. If you point your browser to charitywater.org/September, you'll see last year's campaign that was a successful campaign to raise $1.7 million to provide clean and safe drinking water to all the Biafra people in the Central African Republic. And you'll also notice on that page a ton of video content. Not only was there video content in the lead-up and also some background video content explaining things like sustainability, explaining what it's like to work in the Central African Republic, a country with very few paved roads and no amenities. There's also live videos from the field. September 7th, we filmed a video in the morning of a well, which we then published via Facebook and online that afternoon. Another key aspect of our web presence is mycharitywater.org. Mycharitywater.org is our fundraising platform. It's 15 months old, and in that 15-month time period has raised over $7 million from 7,000 individual campaigners.
It's sort of like mybarackobama.com, right? It has a similar approach, would you say?
Yeah, correct. It's similar to a few of them out there. You can set up your own fundraising campaign. 100% of the donations will go to water projects in line with our model. And the other thing we do is match every donation there with a specific water project. So it takes about 18 months to build one. We're about to start reporting to the first people there. But you run a campaign on My Charity Water. If you raise $5,000, which is the average cost of a water project, there'll be a plaque on it with your name on it, and everyone who donates to your campaign will see where that money went. This is really the fundraising arm, and also the interesting thing about My Charity Water is that it's not just fundraising, it's also a word-of-mouth movement. So every one of those 7,000 campaigners who've run campaigns there, they've also told all their nearest and dearest friends about the cause. They've educated themselves. They've become passionate about the water issue by virtue of fundraising. So the dollars have certainly been extremely successful from that front, but we also like to think about how everyone's birthday that was given up, maybe who's donated a birthday or another effort to fundraise for us, has really become an active supporter in their own community, both online and offline. The other big two I've got to mention for us, and then, you know, I'd love to talk more, especially through questions about kind of how we use these tools, but I wanted to paint the universe out for starters.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter is a huge area of our presence. We were one of the first charities on Twitter, and we were the first nonprofit to have over 1 million Twitter followers. We're connected there with some of... Yeah, sorry, Mika?
I have to ask, did they put you on the suggested users list, or is that all organically earned?
No, we were on the suggested users list for a while, but it was actually really the Twitter community that got us up to that point. About 3 years back, we were the focus of the first Twestival, which was a global event of Twitter users throwing parties in the neighborhood for one cause, and that cause was to support Charity Water.
Right. We did a call with Amanda Rose, who started Twestival, one of the people who started it. It's back in our archives, actually, and it's really well worth going back to listen to how she did the sort of viral organizing part of it. But it was great that you guys were able to partner. Sorry to interrupt. Just
No, no worries. Well, that's a great addition. I was just about to sing Amanda's praises. She's at Amanda on Twitter, incredibly smart woman. It's certainly worth a listen. She knows this stuff really well. So that was the impetus to Charity Water joining Twitter and then being adopted by the Twitter community. And then because of all that noise and all that support from the Twitter community, Twitter also had us on the suggested users list for a while early on. Also, a lot of influential users have supported us as well. People like Jack Dorsey, who's the founder of Twitter, is a key supporter of ours, both financially and through our work. And even interestingly, this week, Justin Bieber joined the 7,000 campaigners on My Charity Water and gave up his 17th birthday. And I just had some stats just before I came into to this call that in the last week we've had over 10,000 new Twitter followers, the Bieber effect. He's got 7.5 million followers, so it's not too surprising. We also had two of our biggest traffic days in history thanks to a few tweets and a couple of Facebook updates from Mr. Bieber. Great to have your support. And the thing is, it's interesting, Mika. It's interesting to have the support of celebrities is always really powerful, and we have had a lot of people associate some of the celebrity supporters with Charity Water with us. You know, Justin Bieber obviously just did a birthday and was talking a lot about it. Will and Jada Smith are running a campaign right now for a year where they're asking their fans to fundraise. They want thousands of their fans to give up their birthdays in the next year for clean water, and the three fundraisers who raise the most money, they're going to take with them on a trip to Ethiopia. So it's great to have the support of these big celebs. I mean, even Seth Godin from the marketing realm did a birthday last year and raised about $50,000 for his 50th.
Actually,
but the interesting thing...
Just say a little bit more about how the give up your birthday thing actually works so people understand.
Yeah, it's a good call for background. So you'll remember me saying a bit earlier on the call that our founder, Scott Harrison, started us with a birthday party on September 7th, 2006. Year in September... Sorry?
That was his birthday, right?
His birthday, yes. He threw a birthday party. And then, you know, sent 100% of the money that he raised to the field. He raised about 25 grand at his birthday party. Scott's that kind of guy. I can't raise that kind of money with my friends. Sent 100% to the field, built some wells at refugee camps in Uganda and put GPS coordinates on all of them, and then sent people the coordinates of what the wells they built. I've heard the joke that a few people at the party might not have even remembered being there, and then a few months later saw the wells they built with their contribution during the night. And then the next year in September, there's another challenge, raising some money specifically for Kenya and some hospitals there. And 92 more people actually gave up their birthday. Scott realized he couldn't scale his birthday party much bigger, but he could ask other people to give up their birthday as well. The next year it got bigger again, and then that led to the creation of MyCharityWater.org, where anyone throughout the year can give up a birthday and say, you know, for this year I'm turning 28 years of age, and for my 28th birthday, I'd like $28. So Justin Bieber asked his fans to donate $17 for his 17th. And the last I saw, he was at about $46,000 raised in 48 hours. So it becomes a really powerful concept. But the interesting thing is that at scale, it's not about the big earners. It's not about the people like Will and Jada Smith who can raise $100,000. The money really comes from a long tail. When you look at all the $7 million raised on the MyCharityWater.org platform, and you look at the donations under the campaign, under $5,000, the average cost of a project versus over $5,000, there's more money that's been raised at the smaller levels, under $5,000 in total, than with the really big campaigns like Adam Lambert from American Idol's, our number one campaign of all time, who raised $290,000. So it's very interesting how these micro donations and micro actions at scale can make a real impact.
Yeah. Is My Charity Water the platform? Did you guys build that yourselves, or did you hire some outside firm to actually do it?
We built that ourselves. We had one developer working on it initially. We also, one of our great supporters is a guy called Michael Birch, who was the founder of Bebo, which sold to AOL, and he supports us financially with our operations. And he also was very active in the initial development of My Charity Water. Still very much a beta. We've got a lot of changes and updates coming to it in the not too distant future. But it's an in-house product. We've got a small tech team at the moment, two people. We're looking to hire software developers. If any of you are really good software developers, I'd love an email from you.
So it's important to talk about these details. So I'm looking at Charity Water's about page. It looks like you have a staff of about a dozen. Is that about right?
22.
22. All right. Well, not everybody gets their picture on the about page then.
We're growing pretty quickly.
And of those 22, it looks like there are three of you who are you've got an online community manager, right? You've got you, the director of digital. You have a designer, and you have a software. You have at least one software developer. I mean, how many people on the staff of Charity Water would you say do the sort of website, IT side, you know, all these pieces that are so integral to how the organization reaches the public?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it comes to the point that at our heart we are a digital organization.
Mm-hmm.
It really starts with our founder. So Scott, mm-hmm. Scott Harrison, our founder, is very actively involved in all our online efforts and our marketing efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Scott is a marketing guy really at heart. He is a storyteller. These are some of his greatest strengths. Not necessarily a tech guy, but certainly a marketer and a storyteller and whatnot. So he's intrinsically involved in all our communications online and offline. And, you know, very active, even to the point where he's hands-on with our Twitter account a lot of the time. So, you know, when you've got the CEO regularly reading and responding on Twitter, you can see how this online stuff's intrinsic to how you operate. Our digital department is me and one staff person. I've got a community manager who works underneath me. Her role is to provide customer support. It's also to, you know, help every fundraiser get the most out of their campaign and proactively support and encourage people to campaign and better. Customer experience is something we think about a lot here, which I don't think a lot of nonprofits traditionally really focus on all the time. It's kind of make the donation, here's a receipt, thank you. We try to think about after that donation, how can we, you know, delight our user. Our technology group, we're looking to hire a couple of roles. Probably at its utmost, that'll be probably three people, I think. At the moment, we've got a developer working there underneath my direction. And then our content team is three people. Our creative director, Vic Harrison, very hands-on online. She's responsible for the beautiful look and feel of charitywater.org. She has another designer who focuses more offline on other elements of our creative. And then we have a full-time content person, Mo Scarpelli, who writes our blog, charitywater.org/blog, does video content, does photography. So across the board, that content piece works. But, I mean, even Scott's in Ethiopia right now with a bunch of donors, and he'll be creating some video content and taking photos from the field that we'll use that content when we get back there, because content's just a core part of how we operate. To succeed in the social web, I think especially if you're a cause, you've got to be content-focused. You've got to be able to show people the difference they're making in lives around the world to really differentiate.
Right. And then the actual provision of the, you know, the support that goes out to all these projects in all these countries, is that done directly by you, or you're giving the money to other contractors who actually do that work?
Yeah, we work on a partnership basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we hand 100% of the funds on to partners that are vetted and monitored by us. And then we work with them on monitoring and evaluation. So it's interesting. Now, the two together, the fact that we're online focused in our fundraising and then partnership modeled in our granting, enables us to be able to scale with the 100% model and with a very low administrative overhead. So 20 staff, last year we raised $11 million for water. This year we'll probably do, it's hard to tell, I think, you know, this quarter we're looking at maybe $3 million we'll raise, and we tend to earn more on the back end of the year.
Sure.
So we've got about four or five in-house that work with our partner organizations. At the moment, we work with 22 partners in 17 different countries. And they range from Water for People, that's one of the world's biggest water nonprofits after us, in Rwanda and Malawi and a few other countries, to large nonprofits like Concern Worldwide, who we work with in Haiti and elsewhere, right through to smaller nonprofits. Like, for example, in Central African Republic, we work with the only guy there who's drilling wells, Jim Hocking and ICDI. You know, we're really supporting his operation in a country where a lot of nonprofits just can't operate. One of the interesting things about that is with the partnership model, it means that we can try to support the whole water sector, and particularly the best partners. So the partners that work with us the best, that are the most effective, that offer the best reporting, they're the partners that we'll support more long-term. It also means that we can take a great idea from one partner and help everyone use it. So, for example, this is a really cool digitally-focused element. Our partner Water for People, who I mentioned earlier, have just launched an Android app called Flow. It's open source, and essentially what it does is it makes it much easier to report on the effectiveness of water projects. So it's very difficult to monitor thousands of water projects over time, especially in rural areas in a developing nation. This mobile tool is trying to make it easy to get that reporting to enable us to give much better reporting to our donors. So instead of saying we can show you where your well is, we can also show you if the water is still pumping there and if it's making a difference in that community. Now, if that happens to be a really amazing tool, if it does happen to work extremely, extremely well, and it's still very much a prototype right now, we can help roll it out across 17 different countries. So it becomes interesting that partnership model really enables a lot of growth that otherwise we probably wouldn't be able to do within our operating budget.
Mm-hmm. And just, I guess this is a question, could the same model also work with a different sector? You know, take, I don't know, vaccines, right? I mean, there's something about the grammar of how Charity Water's name works, right? Charity colon water. That makes me think, is there, you know, a 5 or a 10 year vision here to expand beyond water to say, you know, health or some other, you know, vital, service, that you could apply the same kind of model to where you're basically, you know, the networked messaging and fundraising arm of a larger sector that includes lots of organizations that focus on, you know, actual service delivery.
Yeah, you spotted something well on the brand name there, Mika. 5 points for that one. I think as Scott tells the story, when he initially came back and founded Charity Water, I think he did think that, you know, a new model of charity, the 100% model, the depth of reporting, the really showing people the impact was something that he wanted to pursue. And water was the most important first element to that. But perhaps, you know, I think initially he did think that it could expand to other areas, charity health, charity education. I think we found that the water issue is such a large fundamental issue that it's going to take a lot of our time to get there. I think we look at our 10-year goal. If we can raise $2 billion in 10 years, that would be enough to get 10% of the world's water crisis. You know, and that's, to a lot of people, is a crazy number. However, the average birthday fundraising campaign is worth $1,000. So $2 billion becomes 2 million birthdays in 10 years.
Yeah, well,
and
how much
out of 300 million Americans, that's easy.
Yeah, well, Americans spend, what, $250 billion a year on buying each other tchotchkes for their birthdays. So,
that's very,
you know,
true.
Something in that range. Is your base primarily in the U.S., or are you, you know, how would you describe your – and by the way, are they members? You know, what are the people who, you know, who work with you? How do you think of them? What do you – you know, I use the word member very loosely because I – people aren't paying dues to you, but they're obviously working with you. So, you know, who are they? What do you call them? Where are they from?
Yeah, that's a good call. So the first part of the question, certainly a heavy US-focused audience now, but being a digital charity, we've got global supporters. There are donations coming into Justin Bieber's campaign from all over the place. Funnily enough, within our search advertising, our PPC, this is just an interesting aside, search terms relating to India have been converting really well to it for us. We have a Google grant that we use to buy some pay-per-click ads, and, you know, and then over performance over time, it's terms related to India that trigger donations. I think a lot of them coming from India. Obviously, they're very aware of the water and sanitation issue. The other parts of the question, regarding our fundraisers on My Charity Water, it's interesting. We use a few different terms internally. We sometimes do call them members. We sometimes do call them supporters. Fundraisers is a good word to describe what they're doing, because when you're running a fundraising campaign, it has a finite period. We like to tell people, you know, we want you to give up one birthday, and then we just want you to stick with the message. We know they can't fundraise all around the year, or they'll annoy all their friends and family, but we would love them to give up one of their birthdays. Hopefully they're going to have about, you know, 85 to 110 of them. We'd like one of them. But one of the things we look at is, how do we build a long-term relationship with these people? And this is a big focus of our digital efforts at the moment. So, again, I think a lot of nonprofits tend to be transactional over relationships focused. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, every nonprofit is doing great work and they're very mission focused and, you know, they're trying to change the world. But it's important that your customers, your donors, your supporters, your fundraisers have an amazing experience while they help you. Because it's an amazing thing when someone gives up a birthday and gives up their time and their energy and their money to support you. You need to make that a really rewarding initiative on their part. So one of the terms that we throw around internally is Charity Water Citizen. And we're working at the moment in a big way trying to focus our digital efforts on what does that citizenship process look like? You know, if you are one of our biggest supporters, and for now it might only be a few hundred people for starters, how can you really connect with the brand on a deep level, and how can we show the impact you're making? You know, if you become a really big supporter, fundraise, donate regularly, buy your mum an e-card for Mother's Day, and then maybe inspire 10 of your friends to give up a birthday, cumulatively, you might have made $20,000 worth of impact, and one person could be changing the life of $20,000 is 1,000 life change. $20 gives one person clean water. becomes quite remarkable if you can get that long-term connection from people.
So we're getting close to the halfway mark, so I want to just give folks who are listening a heads up that if you have a question and want to get yourself into the Q&A queue, that you should just hit *6 on your phone, and I'll see those start to line up on my dashboard here. Paul, let me ask you, to what degree are you trying to introduce your, I love that term, citizens, but to what degree are you trying to introduce your supporters to each other? I mean, I see, you know, you have a very big Twitter presence, but Twitter is, you know, I mean, it's a wonderful lattice kind of network, but it's still one to many for the most part, whereas your Facebook page, in theory, could be the place where, you know, your kind of core activists connect up with each other. You know, to what degree are you, is it a good thing in your mind to enable that to happen? Is it a distraction? You know, would it make your work harder? You know, I love your description of you know, that you wanted to make participation a delightful experience. We all know that that's hard to do, you know, and people are busy, people can be cranky, you know, there are all sorts of squeaky wheel problems that can come up. So I'm just wondering, you know, talk a little bit about your philosophy and approach to connecting your supporters to each other, if that's valuable, if that's time-consuming, you know, what the benefits might be or the costs might be.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's certainly something we've thought about a lot, and something that we're starting to trial a little bit, but nothing, we haven't done anything too formal at the moment about connecting them with each other online. Fundamentally, there's a couple of things I think about first. A couple of different golden rules for digital that I kind of funnel every decision we make through. First is something that I feel pretty core is that there's two golden rules. One is that people are good. And they'll do good if you make it easy for them. People want to do good. They are good. Make it easy for them to do good. They'll get there. The second is that people are kind of lazy. you know, that's no slight against them. It's just we're very busy in this society. So it needs to be a minimal, the more you can remove hurdles and remove time and effort whilst allowing them to do good, they'll get there. The interesting thing about communities as well, where we want to connect with people and have value for them is what's in it for them. And we really need to make sure that is a valuable experience. When we're creating content they can share and passing things off, every one of our videos, you know, we work so hard on making sure they're amazing. We're working on a video right now that we're going to launch on Earth Day that we're putting months against. It's going to be the story of the water crisis. So when we have those content pieces that is us talking to people, we always want to make sure that the content that we put out there is amazing because people's attention is so valuable. Mm-hmm. So with that, it's not as simple as just, you know, kind of building a community and hoping they come. You know, we could set up a Ning community of our big supporters and get them in there really quickly, but what's the strategy? What are we trying to do with them, and how is their experience going to be amazing? We've also toyed with looking at, for example, Facebook has a new groups aspect, and that might be an interesting way for people to connect with each other. But we've still got to answer that question of why, and then what's the value for them. If people are giving us time, we really want it to be valuable for them so that they'll keep coming back and they'll stay with us for years and years.
Right.
But it's something we're very interested in.
Yeah, so that's a little bit different, say, than Kiva's model, which also allows people to, you know, create their own fundraising campaigns or, you know, around specific projects. But Kiva also has, you know, specifically on their in their web presence, has a very big forum for, you know, Kiva members to just interact with each other and generate, you know, their own ideas, their own projects. And it would be a good idea for us to drill down a bit further with the folks at Kiva about, you know, why they think that's valuable. So you at this point you're taking an approach that's very much people's time is and attention is scarce, so let's be very, very judicious with you know what we do to you know tap into that time and attention, and simply enabling lateral connections because you can, you know, without a clear strategy for why you're doing it, you're saying is a bad approach.
Yeah, correct. I think, yeah, we're trying to be judicious, but also we are trialing things at the same time. A mentor of mine and someone I look up to in the digital space is a guy called Mike Moran, who's a former colleague at Conversion and did 30 years at IBM.com. And he wrote a great book about digital marketing called Do It Wrong Quickly. And that's become a bit of a motto I use a bit as well. So Do It Wrong Quickly, when it boils down to it, is it's very cheap and easy to launch and trial a lot of things online, and it's easy to measure. So you can try things, measure them, see if they're successful, and then scale them. And that's really the approach that we'll take with the community. I think we'll start small by connecting a few of our real core supporters together and having them support some fundraisers. And as we start get some learnings and some results that we can point to and we start seeing that it is a valuable experience, we'll scale it. But we're not going to kind of buy the farm and build the community first and then work out what we're going to do with it.
Got it. Great. So we're at the halfway point, and I can see we've got some calls starting to trickle, questions starting to trickle in. And so first person, I've just unmuted your phone from Michigan. If you would just identify yourself, if you don't mind, and ask your question.
My name is Aaron Mazur. I'm actually living in Los Angeles. But, Paul, you mentioned that a big part of the model is the 100% donations that go directly into the programming. How does Charity Water cover all of its overhead costs? I mean, you mentioned Michael Birch, you know, helps fund the program, but where's all the additional money coming, you know, to cover the credit card fees and your other costs?
Yeah, that's a great question. The primary means of revenue is a group of high-end donors that we call The Well. And these are high-end donors that make a three-year commitment at a minimum $12,000 per year up to $100,000, or there's a couple more that are higher than that. It includes people like Sean Parker, one of the Facebook co-founders, Jack Dorsey, and some other significant individuals you can give at that level. So we really try to help them understand how supporting operations gives great leverage. So at the moment, and we're expecting our leverage to only increase because our costs don't plan to rise anywhere near our fundraising efforts because we're doing it all online. But at the moment, a dollar given for operations equates to about $4 for water. So that's a major revenue stream. I do have one angel investor that makes a significant yearly commitment and hopefully a couple more. Also, there's some operations partnerships with corporations. Sometimes when corporates partner with them, they direct the funding to ops so that public donations will go to water and they'll support operations. Also, some foundations. There's a few different revenue streams. I'm interested in finding more digital revenue streams for operations as well, but the 100% model is just so important to us that we never, ever want anyone to accidentally give to ops if they're trying to give to water or think that their money going to water and we don't send 100% of it to water. So far digitally, every cent we've raised digitally has been water money. And last year, that was 70% of our organizational revenue. It was over $7 million.
Okay, he answered your question. Thank you. If anyone else has a question, go ahead and star six your phone. I'm going to ask another question, Paul. You said, you know, your motto was, to do things wrong quickly. What's what would you say was like one or two of the harder mistakes? You know, you guys have tried various things. Maybe share one or two lessons learned from a failure, if you would.
Yeah. That's a good question. One really real standout for us last year was, as I was saying earlier, every year in the September campaign, we live drill a well from the field. So every year on our birthday, September 7th, somewhere around the world, we're doing a specific fundraising campaign for a specific reason, and we'll live drill a well to show our supporters how the money they've already raised is already making a difference. In the past, that means we built wells in Haiti on the day, in Ethiopia. This year, it was in the Central African Republic. From the upfront, it can be a risky strategy. It essentially requires our founder and our other two creative team members, you know, being up before dawn somewhere in Africa to date, hacking together a video and then uploading it via satellite late in the day Eastern time back in America for most of our supporters are on that time zone. So it can be a risky strategy. This past year, it was even more risky because we were at a site where we didn't know if we were going to hit water. It was a village called Mwale, which was a couple of hours outside the capital, Bengi, in Central African Republic. And it's a village that our partner in CAR, ICDI, had tried to give water to three times previously. and had never been able to hit water. They tried to hand dig a well and got so deep that people were using oxygen. It didn't hit water. They took in a drill and ran out of drill bits before they hit water. This year we thought we would hit water. We had a new drill that could go deeper. We'd done some work with geologists and whatnot. And then I remember waking up the morning of it. I was in New York City, and I got an email from our founder, Scott, just started with, things don't look good here. And then we had this day where it was kind of liaising with Africa throughout the day in real time. We could see our audience on Twitter and online getting excited about the live drill to come. We were broadcasting it live on Ustream and Facebook, mm-hmm. for starters, and then putting it on the website. We could see all this excitement building, but at this point I started to realize that we weren't going to have a happy story. Normally it's a very happy story, water spurting, people singing and dancing. Water changes lives, so when they get water, it's amazing. You know, you can see the videos on our site. This year it was a sad story. I was able to see the video just before we launched it, and you know, it's our poor founder just looking very upset on his birthday, and certainly a sadder story. And our commitment to openness and transparency is stuff that, of course, we're going to air it and push it out there. Really didn't know how people would react. So we launched it live, and the outpouring of support we had from people was amazing. We had Nick Kristof from the New York Times tweeting about, you know, the openness and transparency. We had our nonprofit partners talking about, you know, how great it was to see a failure being broadcast in a sector that, you know, we're always a bit nervous in the nonprofit sector to say that we're not perfect. No one right. is, but, you know, you right. don't want to say that because there's a lot of pressure to be really effective when you're a nonprofit. And it turned out to be one of the biggest positives, because we stuck to what's core to our brand, and that's transparency, that's a commitment to, you know, engaging openly with our supporters, no matter what the story might be. We had another one this week that we posted a blog post just yesterday about our $20. So $20 gives one person clean water. We used to say $20 gives one person clean water for 20 years. Now we're at a point where we've granted $30 million to the field in 17 different countries, and a water project in Haiti might be $30,000 and somewhere else might be $3,000. And sustainability is also something that's very different in very different countries. So we've removed the 20 years element, but instead of just removing it and never mentioning it again, we're proactively telling people why we removed it and what that means. And that lesson has been informed in part by the response from last year's live drill failure.
Right. Great. Thank you. We've got another question. Hang on one second as I invite the person on. Looks like a call from New York. Go ahead, introduce yourself and ask your question.
Hi, my name's Lindsay Lohman. I actually used to work with Paul, and spirit of full disclosure.
Lindsay.
How's it going?
Good, mate.
I wanted to check in with you on what you guys do as far as that community moderation and keeping people inspired throughout the fundraising process from kind of a more tactical level can definitely be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I was hoping for a real softball question. That's a hard one. we do a lot of things. I think it comes back to content being the most of it. I think there's a few things. First off is the brand can be inspiring, so every communication is out of interest. Key messaging is really important, so I think people understanding that they know they're making a difference. Just $20 gives one person clean water, so it's very easy to make a difference for a large number of people in a short amount of time. Justin Bieber gave, you know, over 1,700 people clean water for his 70th birthday in 48 hours. So that stuff becomes really core. Also, we're very valid about how we communicate with people. So one of our big tasks actually for the start of the year is revamping all our emails to our fundraisers from My Charity Water. You know, we don't want them to have an automated feel. We want them to be personalized based on that person and their activity. We're even trying to proactively at the moment think more about how can our staff and our volunteers and other supporters we have help our campaigners have an even better experience. There was one point last year, a great book on this type of stuff is Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh, the Zappos CEO. Mm-hmm. And he came and visited our office last year during the September campaign. As part of his book tour, he put the proceeds to Charity Water. And one of the things we did in line with everything he preaches in Delivering Happiness was we called three people who were in the September campaign and had birthdays that day, and our whole office and Tony Hsieh's crew sang them happy birthday. And one of the guys we spoke to, like, his response was just, wow. You could see he was blown away by that level of content and that personal attention. And I know that guy's going to be a lifelong fan of Charity Water, and that's great because he took the plunge of giving up a birthday and fundraising for us. It doesn't matter if he raised $50,000 or $50.
Yeah,
he's taken that plunge and told us to his friends. So it's a lot of that real personal connection and a focus on, you know, how can we delight people? How can we make them say, wow?
Great, great. Okay, we have a question, it looks like, from Ohio.
Yep.
Welcome on.
Actually, I live in San Francisco now. My name's Matt Monday.
All right. Everybody's got these funny places with their cell phones. Yes. Okay. Well, go ahead. Tell us your name and ask the question.
Left home. So, first off, I really, really appreciate the digital approach that you're taking. And seeing now as our digital world is moving away from the desktop and into our hands in the form of mobile smartphones, I'm wondering what your mobile strategy is going to be into the future.
Great question.
Yeah, good question. It's a difficult one. I've got to admit, it's a nut that I don't think I or we have cracked yet. It's certainly interesting. I think one of the things that we'd love to do, given that fundraisers are a big focus, so text to donate to date has not been something that really excites me. We tend to worry less about the donate button. For example, the donate button is much less important to us on our site than people campaigning and supporting us because you get the additional benefits of the word of mouth and you get a chance to inform them and build a relationship. A lot of the text to donate stuff right now is very clunky, especially because there's a couple of core things for us. One is the 100% model, so we'd have to pay back fees, and the fees can be a little hefty on some of the donate programs. And two is that commitment to tying donations to specific impact, and you don't get great information back about who it is who's donating to you with a text message. One of the things we're very proactive about is making sure that all our content is deliverable over tablets and smartphones. You know, we know people are going to be using the iPad to view our site. So proactively, you know, most of the videos on our site will be posted with Vimeo, which is compliant with HTML5 and whatnot, and not a Flash player that people can't view. Also, I think it's more integrating mobile with what we're already doing. The ideal mobile solution for me, and if there's a vendor on the phone and you've got a product that you think works, drop me a line. The ideal solution would be a real seamless way that people could donate to people's campaigns via a cell phone, and receive the same experience as if they were on the web, whereby 100% of the donation go through, and eventually we'll be able to show them exactly where that donation went. But it's not quite there. So, yeah, it's certainly an issue that we're looking at. No clear answers, and, you know, we'll just take the do-it-wrong-quickly approach and try a few things, I think.
Great, great. Okay, another question. This caller looks like they're from New York. Could be from anywhere. Go ahead.
This is Sarah Stewart, and I am in New York, and I have a lot of experience with on-the-ground participatory video work in the field in developing countries. I wonder how you're generating your media and your video reporting for your projects and to what extent there's participatory element to it.
Good question. I don't know how much detail I can answer it in, as I'm not the guy who does it. We use a pretty simple camera. It's a Sony something or other. I don't even know the exact name of it. From the field, a lot of it's done by hand. Our content producer, we send to the field a fair bit to get stories. Scott's very capable. As far as personalized video goes, we tend to only do that for either, you know, high-end donors or specific use cases, so every September campaigner. We don't provide videos for every one of our 7,000 donors. What we do provide them with is specific photos of their water project, as well as GPS coordinates, and if they've raised over $5,000, a plaque with their name on it. We're always interested in doing more with video, though, especially where we can personalize it. I think what we'd like to do is get to a point where every country we work in, we have great content about our work there. Some of it will be video, some of it will be photos, some of it will be text. But it means that, you know, if I know that my donation went to Cambodia, I'm going to be able to learn that, oh, it didn't actually go for a well. It went to filtration systems and a biosand filter that's serving a family. So the more content and the more we can educate our people in an informative way, the better. And video is going to be a big part of that. But, yeah, not much participatory as yet. Could happen.
Just to the person asking, do you want to add any insight on how you would do that or how you've been doing it in your own work?
I'm working on gender-based violence issues in with refugee communities, and maybe these teams could help collaborate with Charity Water. So maybe there's some resources out there that we could help connect you with. I'm very interested in people telling their own stories and growing as leaders in the process, and that's been the heart of that work.
Cool.
Yeah, well, maybe there's a role for somebody to play to network the videographers. So that,
there's an interesting point here, I think, as well, in that sometimes the supporters themselves can be incredibly inspiring. Like in my role, almost every week there's a campaigner that inspires me. My favorite is this little 8-year-old girl called Riley Goodfella, who raised enough money for 3 wells by doing things like she ate rice and beans for a month with some of her friends and had their parents donate the extra money for dinner. Her dad was twit-picking photos of her walking down the street carrying a jerry can in the morning to see what it would be like to carry her water. She even sent us a photo where she spent a night drawing 4,500 lines on a piece of paper to try to conceptualize what 4,500 kids dying every day from lack of water and sanitation meant. So as a nonprofit, if for the nonprofits on the phone, think about how amazing your supporters are and the stories that could be there about what they're doing to support your cause, because it can be really inspiring and it inspires people to see how easy it is to make a difference.
Wow. Is her story up on the site somewhere where it's easy for people to find?
Probably is. I'll have a quick Google while we're talking.
Okay. Good. And I'm going to our next caller. Looks like Craig, maybe? Craig Hansen? Hansen Craig?
Actually, well, I'm Carrie, but...
Okay. I have is caller ID here, so I'm terribly sorry if I'm mangling people's identities. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. My name is Carrie Hansen, and I work for New Root International, so same industry, but I just wanted to thank you for what you're doing with Charity Water. You guys do amazing work and been a big fan for a long time. You guys have done an amazing job with marketing and PR, and I was just wondering if you could talk about maybe that there was one certain thing that gave you the big break, that, you know, gave you the opportunity to move into the household name category.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to be thinking about that one for a second. While I am, I just tweeted a link to Riley Goodfella's story on our blog. And as I did so, I kind of thought, wow, this is part of why it's kind of easy to do this social media stuff, because I knew there'd be a great story on the blog that we put together. So at Paul Young, I spell Paul with 2 L's, the link's there if you want to check out her story in depth.
Mm-hmm.
The one big break's a really hard question, because it feels like in my time here, we've had like 3 or 4 big breaks. You know, this week, I didn't find out Justin Bieber was doing his birthday until the weekend. And then we had our 2 biggest traffic days in the history of the organization. During the September campaign, Will and Jada Smith jumped on board. That was the other biggest traffic day in our organization. So it's more of a consistent momentum. And I think it's part of being a startup. In many ways, we're kind of riding a wave and just trying to execute as much as possible. The biggest thing, though, is what enables us to get places is each and every supporter. You never know what supporter is going to be able to provide a big break. Will and Jada Smith, for example, got on board because their lawyer, who's quite a well-connected figure in charity in Hollywood, had done a birthday campaign before and had an amazing experience. So there's that flow-on effect that you never know, and almost every day you can have that connection. So I think it comes down to those really core brand principles. If people can love the brand, can connect with the brand, and can connect with what the brand stands for, which for us is a 100% model, proving it, and for a cause that we believe is extremely worthy, you get that underpinning right, and then you just need to execute to get results.
So I'm going to ask a question now that if anybody else has a question, just hit *6. We have about 10 minutes left. Paul, a lot of the people who are listening and who will listen to this call, and, you know, we put it up as a podcast, I think are probably saying to themselves, but they're a new organization. Charity Water, you know, didn't exist 5 years ago, and so it has the benefit of sort of launching into, you know, without any of the baggage of you know, the sort of bricks and mortar techniques and overhead that, you know, many organizations still have. So I wonder, you know, and I'm sure you're asked this question a lot, which is, you know, how would you advise, you know, a small or medium-sized nonprofit that does have, you know, has been operating in a more traditional way, you know, what are the sort of easy, and then what are the hard changes that you think they need to make in order to work effectively in a networked age?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's actually something I think about a lot because my background prior to Charity Water was all working with large brands. And I was doing the same type of things I'm trying to do here, but I was doing it for, you know, for example, New York Times or Greco Children's Products or a large telephone company in Australia. And so I can certainly understand how much difficult it is with a older fashioned or even just a much larger brand, how it can be harder to do some of these things that might look easy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it starts from the top, which, you know, you can do by educating people internally. A lot of it starts from the top in terms of a commitment to content. When you have the pure commitment to content, to design, to branding, to producing content that elevates the brand, that's a huge success metric within social media. You know, to be able to produce content that will inspire people is really powerful, and we try to never lose focus on the ability to inspire. The other connection I think is important is that everything can be measurable. So it might be hard to think about walking into your C-suite and telling them we should do more stories online, but there's two things in your favor. One, it's incredibly cheap. Putting together a web video, a great one. I think, so my marketing budget last year was $2,000 that we raised, total marketing budget that we raised $11 million on. So it can be incredibly cheap to do this digital
focus. Right, but making videos cost money too.
Well, part of that's paying our videographers, and then, yes, there's internal staff. You've got those skill sets internally, you can just do them. But if you compare the cost of making a video for the web versus making a TV product or, buying a traditional advertising space, you can do some really great things. But the thing is, as well, it can all be measurable. So think measurement, and then it's pretty easy to start making a case to get more resources behind these elements. The other thing is really the fact that across the board we are a digital organization, have an understanding here is very helpful. Our CEO knows how to Twitter. That's a big step. So from my experience working with big brands, this is the case as well, that training people and helping them understand the new online space is one of the biggest hurdles, because if people don't understand something, the likely response is to say no, especially if they're a lawyer. When they start to understand things, more opportunity gets out there. I think the other really big opportunity, too, is untapping the potential of the people that you're already connected with. Think about your donor base, and don't think about them as wallets. Think about them as people. And think about them as people that you can build a rewarding relationship with that involves them doing things for you, but it also involves you doing things for them. For example, at the end of the year, every nonprofit gets a ton of revenue at the end of December when people dump dollars before tax, or so I've learned. That means that most of the emails you get from causes you're connected with are asking you for money. Our end-of-year emails are thank you. People for their time. It's a report on the work we've done this year. It's hopefully going to inspire them to feel good about our organization because of the efforts that we've done together. So it's really that different angle of coming together. But if you have a commitment to content, you're open to working openly with the people that you're connected with, your supporters, your fans, and you're ready to do it wrong quickly, almost anyone can have some success in this space.
Great. Well, I'm going to ask one last question and give folks, if anybody has another question, one last chance to hit *6 on your phone so I can call on you. What resources do you follow or people you follow for inspiration and as you innovate in the space, you know, what do you rely on for good advice or ideas?
That's a good question. I'm big on input, so I read a ton of stuff. It's interesting. My background, as I said, comes out of the for-profit world, not the non-profit world. So I'm still getting more connected in the development sector and the non-profit sector about what works there. Aside from that, I mean, true to form, it's social media that's my biggest learning resource. So Twitter's a really useful tool if you follow the right people and you get that casual connection. My favorite tool is my Google Reader, which, you know, I've been stocking for years with various marketing bloggers and thoughts, so ranging from the likes of, you know, Seth Godin, I mentioned before, is a Charity Water supporter, through to Shell Holtz and the Resources on Personal Democracy Forum. But the biggest thing, I think, is to find the people that provide valuable insight for you and then follow who they're following. Mika, if I think you're really, really bright and I can tell that you think five people are bright, they're probably worth following. One tool that I've become really excited about recently, I don't know if you use it all, Mika, but Quora, Quora.com. It's this new Q&A site. It's awesome. It's like Yahoo Answers if all the answers are by smart people writing intelligence lengthy pieces. So take a look at Quora. But really online, I mean, we pass a lot of books around the office, and they tend to be things like, you know, Rework by 37 Signals. It's more that kind of approach, or something by Clay Shirky, than you know, kind of a traditional development tome. But social media is a great place for learnings.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we do have another person in the queue wanting to ask a question. So go ahead. Looks like it's coming from Washington.
Yeah, I actually am. This is Barbara in Washington, D.C. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about Facebook. We haven't had much luck in general fundraising on Facebook. I don't know how you all use it.
Oh, good call. I didn't really mention Facebook either. My apologies. Facebook for us is probably something that we've been focusing more on since I joined the organization. You know, we have 1.3 million Twitter followers, but we only have 150,000 fans. 155,000, bit of a Bieber effect there as well, on Facebook. Facebook for us is not a fundraising venue, and this is an interesting thing. We actually don't ask for money anywhere in social media. We don't ask for money on Twitter. We don't ask for money on Facebook. We use these as connection points with the organization. So the way I kind of envision Charity Water within Facebook is that this is an audience of our closest fans, and there's a couple of ways I think about it like that. If you say you like something on Facebook, you're telling all your friends you like it. It's kind of like putting a bumper sticker on your car. It also means you're opting into having that cause talk to you every day, and that's really powerful. You know, I think over 50% of Facebook users log in every single day, and there's 500 million people there. So we're really focused on it. I mean, at the same time for us, since Facebook launched the Open Graph last year, their new like buttons all over the web, we saw a 1,000% increase in traffic from Facebook. So our supporters are using Facebook to push our message to their fans. So once again, it comes down to trying to create amazing content, trying to connect deeply with Facebook and make sure all our sites are connected closely with it so that our supporters can pass it on to their audiences in Facebook. And really try to build a community that can connect with us. So we try to put on great content. We're trying to ask questions. I think we're going to do a lot of different things to try to engage people a bit more. You know, back in September, we gave away some T-shirts and stuff, and we asked some trivia questions. We were using a tab from a company called Buddy Media that's a great New York-based brand to try to drive some more engagement. So there's a few things there, but certainly it's a valuable strategic initiative of us to try to build up our Facebook audience over the next 12 to 18 months because we think it's going to be a long-term asset for the organization.
Paul, last question, and this has really been a wonderful call. Do you blog about these sorts of strategic, you know, experiments and, you know, what you learn from them? Is there a way for people to sort of follow you and stay in touch with this conversation as it evolves?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter, but there's a lot of inane stuff there on me. For example, yesterday I was celebrating Ireland beating England in a cricket match. I blog personally at I blog personally at paulyoung.com, P-A-U-L-L, though I'm a somewhat informal blogger because, you know, I tend to focus most of my efforts on the Charity Water side. I am planning on trying to put together a blog post about, specifically about our experience with Justin Bieber this week and share some numbers and whatnot just because it's really interesting. The other area that I'd encourage if anyone wants to engage with me is Quora.com. We have a Charity Water area in there, and I've already answered a few questions for people about how we do digital and whatnot. If you've got a question that you'd like answered, go to Quora.com, find Paul Young and ask a question of me. I'll be most happy to answer it in that venue as soon as I get time. So, yeah, really happy to connect with people in any of those venues.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We've spent another really, really stimulating hour together. Really appreciate your time, Paul Young from Charity Water. Just a reminder that we'll be getting together again in 2 weeks, this time with Brian Sivak, the former chief technology officer of the city of Washington, D.C., who's going to talk with us about the lessons he learned on the inside about how you create a new culture of digital government. I think it will be a really fascinating call. I've spent a lot of time talking with Brian and learning from him. So looking forward to everybody joining in again in 2 weeks, March 17th, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, for the next PDF Network call. Thanks again to AT&T, our ongoing sponsor for these calls. And thank you, Paul, for really bringing it. And keep up the great work with Charity Water, and we'll see everybody online.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Mika. Thanks, everybody.
Mm-hmm.